You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. Could New York have been saved from the storm surge of Hurricane Sandy? Can we protect other cities like Washington, D.C. or Baltimore? What about the rest of near-coastal residents? Joining us now is Professor J. Court Stevenson from the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Science in Cambridge, Maryland. Professor Stevenson, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
The devastation in New York State and New Jersey from Hurricane Sandy was shocking, but would you say it was predictable?
Well, in the long term, it is. But in the short term, I think it came as a shock to me. I actually grew up around New York Harbor. My dad had a boatyard on Staten Island, which actually you're probably seeing in the news right now. We encountered several hurricanes during the course of my younger days when I was there, and each one was terrifying in its own way. But I never really would have expected that the subway system would have been disabled in such a drastic way. And I was really surprised by the Hoboken flooding, too. So in the abstract, yes, I was really thinking that this could happen, but when it actually is here, it's shocking.
Well, I think I'm in the same boat there, and so are a lot of people. You know, on Radio EcoShock, we interview a lot of scientists and activists saying we have to cut emissions, and so far it hasn't worked. Now we have to look at adapting to extreme climate events while we cut greenhouse gas emissions. What could New York do to prevent more catastrophes like Sandy, do you think?
Well, I know that Mayor Bloomberg had convened, I think he called it a subcommittee, several years ago, even as they started. So it's been a question for a while whether New York Harbor could be protected from surges like the one we got from Sandy. The problem with New York Harbor is right now there's three entrances. One is at Hell Gate, which is actually comes off of Long Island Sound. The main one is in the Narrows. Narrows goes between Brooklyn and Staten Island, and that's the main passage that the big ships come into the harbor. The other one is a smaller passage, but nonetheless important because of the tanker traffic. It's the Kildan Cull. So you'd have to really stop up those three passages, so that gets pretty complicated rather quickly. I'm sure that the committee is looking at other options, too. There's one that is even more encompassing, which would actually be one long barrier from Sandy Hook going north to the Rockaways, and you'd have to have a major opening there that would be convertible up and down or depending on how you wanted to do it. But at they call it the Ambrose Channel. It's the big channel that goes in and out of New York Harbor. So it is doable to really prevent a surge, I think. And definitely the mayor, I think, is probably looking at those options more carefully right now. The problem is it takes a lot of money, and it also takes a lot of patience and community will to do that. And I think something like this really starts to get people wound up. I've been on committees before where we start going ahead, but when the price tag goes up, people get very, very anxious. Of course, $10 billion sounds like a huge amount of money, and it is. It's about the same amount that we took to build the Boston Big Dig project, so it's not a trifle. But these projects, even though they can amount to that level, can probably save themselves on one big storm like this.
Yeah, and we may have some saving in human lives, too. That's another big point. Could you tell us about surge protection devices installed in other parts of the world?
You know, when you travel through Europe, you know, you see these, well, the big project that most of us know about is in the Netherlands. I mean, there they've put polders or, you know, barriers against the sea for miles. And then across the Scheldt River in the southwest of the Netherlands, they've got a series of barriers. Actually, there's quite a few of them. If you really want to go to study this thing, it requires kind of a massive undertaking because there's just so much going on in the Netherlands. But there's another big project in Italy. It's for Venice, and the Venice Lagoon, it actually has three major outlets to the sea, and they're really going to put basically barriers that come off of the bottom. In other words, they're hinged, and they pop up when you pump air into them. They just pop off the bottom, and they're built to withstand a pretty good surge there. Venice has had flooding for, well, a good 50 or 60 years. that's been problematic. It's occurring because you have special winds that come down from the north and start to interact with the tidal dynamics to give you a surge in the upper Adriatic. The other places that the most famous probably is the Thames River downstream of London, and the Thames has been very operational for quite a few years now, and it basically stops the surges that come off the North Sea and would have really played havoc with London numerous times. Now, that project is an interesting one because it's a big one and it's important, but it was not designed very well for the latest sea level projections, say, to 2050. So they're going to have to probably replace that or amp it up. They can over-rotate. They have big rotating drums that come down and actually close off the sea. They're massive, about seven of them across the river. And they can over-rotate those to make them stand up a little bit higher. Again, that's another project that's, you know, rated in the billions of dollars. There's a smaller project that I've seen also in Belfast, in Northern Ireland. And that one is a smaller project, and it really is designed to basically do the same thing. There's North Sea surges that are a problem there, and it's closed off regularly. So these things are not unheard of. A lot of it, of course, now depends on this new thing that we've got, relatively new thing, is not only surges that occur on more regular frequencies, but these irregular hurricane kinds of problems, these cyclones. So we've got an array of projects around the developed world. Even the underdeveloped countries, though, would like to have more tidal protection, like Bangladesh. The Dutch have been trying to really work out a system for that low-lying country. And it's about the size of Wisconsin, but it's about half of it is just about at sea level, and you can easily get a 17 or 18-foot surge in there. Sometimes it goes to 22 feet. So there's a huge undertaking there, too. So it's not only confined to the developed countries, it's also the underdeveloped countries, especially the ones that are close to the sea.
Right. And the Bangladeshis, you said, built some storm survival structures that could be of interest.
Yeah, I think the Western world just hasn't been attuned to this. I went through it's a huge delta. It's the Ganges River combined with the Brahmaputra, and it's a fascinating place. They have a national park there with the Bengal tigers, and it's a very unique place to visit. It's wonderful, but on the periphery of the park, there are numerous towns and villages, and they get flooded not every year, but every 3 or 4, maybe 5 years sometimes. So they've turned to outside help to actually construct what they call cyclone shelters. So when they get a surge up the Bay of Bengal, they can go up into these structures. And at least during, you know, a week or so when the water is really high, they can find temporary shelter. And then when the water goes down, they can try to resume their lives. So it's one of those things that it's a quick stopgap. It doesn't really help you preserve things the way you might want, but at least it helps the population get through during the worst times.
And of course, many of those people are already used to living without electricity, so it's a little bit more of a low-tech situation than we had in places like New York and New Jersey. Now, in your press conference briefing with Mike Tidwell of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, you and oceanographer William Boycourt warned about what might happen or what could have happened to Maryland and Virginia and the nation's capital if Hurricane Sandy had turned inland further south. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, we were worried at first that this thing might turn earlier to the west, and it was riding up on the Gulf Stream, and that's probably one of the reasons why it stayed as strong as it did. The Gulf Stream has warmer water, so you still have a lot of the cyclone being regenerated. Cooler water, the cyclones or hurricanes, as you can use those interchangeably, tend to dissipate. So this thing rode the Gulf Stream up, and if it would have gotten off the Gulf Stream a little earlier, turned west because of the front that was coming in, we might have had it in Chesapeake Bay. Now, it depends on where in Chesapeake Bay it actually enters, but if the tide surge on the strong side of the hurricane, which is usually you think of that as your northwest quadrant, actually, if that wave enters the bay and propagates up the bay, you have a special situation in Chesapeake Bay where it's like a funnel, and the tidal energy that goes in through the capes gets amplified sometimes as you get towards the top of the bay, mostly due to what we call the resonance time of the estuary. And to make a long story short, you can really get, you know, a doubling of the wave as it comes up to Washington and Baltimore, which is where our population centers are.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Professor J. Court Stevenson. We're talking about what major cities could do to protect themselves from storm surges and rising seas in an era of climate change. Well, Professor Stevenson, let's look at Washington, D.C. If a big storm surge, say the 14-foot monster that hit Manhattan, if that came to Washington, D.C., what would happen there?
Well, you know, a lot of Washington is built on pretty high ground, but unfortunately for the national monuments on the Mall, most of those are pretty low-lying. It doesn't appear to be the case until you really look at some of the topography of the area. And when you really look at it pretty carefully, and FEMA has done this, and they're kind of aware that this is a potential issue, but we've actually projected one of the earlier storms, which is called Hurricane Isabel, happened in 2003, and Isabel came up and amplified the tide and had almost a worst-case track. If you really would have amped up Isabel's track with a little bit higher, it came in as a pretty low-level storm when it finally was at the bay. But if you amp that up, you get about 15 feet of surge in the Potomac right outside of Washington. So 15 feet means my favorite place to be in Washington, among the most favorite, is the National Archives. And you'd just about be at the basement of the National Archives, which actually kind of is frightening to me because a lot of our treasures are really there. But it actually could flood pretty wide area around the Mall. And, you know, I think that's a concern for a lot of people. The first reaction that I heard was that when FEMA wanted to reclassify the area, when they realized what kind of possibilities there were, and a lot of the people didn't want to be reclassified because these businesses would have had to pay more insurance. So they really sort of stymied the first attempt on that. I don't know how that is right now, but I know that there were thoughts about how to try to protect the Mall better, and I'd really like to see more action on that kind of a plan.
Could Washington and Baltimore be protected from a big storm surge?
Well, that's the question, and I think theoretically, yes, but again, it's just how much do you want to pay for what kind of a structure? And we really haven't studied the details of any of this, so it's really hard to say exactly, you know, what kind of construction we need and what kind of sediments we've got to really anchor big, you know, heavy equipment into. But, you know, based on some of the other areas in the world, it's definitely feasible. It's just a matter of where to put it and how that might affect the ecology of the area, which, you know, you really... The Potomac is really important in terms of its aquatic ecosystem, so you don't want to really do anything there that would ruin the estuary. So there's a lot of environmental as well as just engineering considerations.
And what about coastal residents outside these big cities?
Well, you know, I live in a county that's it's called Talbot County. It's pretty high. By that, I mean my house is 10 feet above mean sea level. But we have a county that's south of us. About a third of it is probably less than 5 feet. And that area, actually, 1933, largely flooded in a hurricane. Didn't have a name because we didn't name hurricanes previous to World War II. But the 33 hurricane came in and wiped out a lot of farmers' fields for a while because it brings salt up from the ocean, and that salt really prevents you to crop the land for quite a while. So the farmers were really pretty much, you know, out of business for a while. So that's the historical information we have on that. And unfortunately, you know, they've gone ahead and a lot of those farm fields are now in houses. Now, it's not dense housing, but it is really floodable areas, and it is vulnerable. And since it is a big part of the county, I think a number of us are worried about what to do. One of the things that you could do is try to find the high spot. There is a high ridge area that it's almost runs in a parallel line that you probably could protect. But below that, you'd probably have to just talk about managed retreat, which just means you'd probably try to buy out or encourage people to leave that area that on a permanent basis, but they might have summer homes there or something like that if they were elevated. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that we're talking about in Chesapeake Bay. Now, nobody really wants to do that because the American spirit is basically pretty independent and nobody likes to be told what to do where. So, you know, we've had a lot of pushback on that.
You know, I'm wondering, is surge hardening anything more than a stopgap measure? I mean, top climate scientists like Dr. James Hansen of NASA say if we don't reduce greenhouse gases very quickly and soon, the normal sea level could rise up to 3 feet or a meter by 2100. And that's like a permanent high tide even before you have these big storms. I'm almost picturing we may have to pull back from some of these cities and a lot of the current coastal line. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm totally in agreement with Jim Hansen's warnings, and I think if you're really worried about your grandchildren and 2100 and beyond, I think we've really got to come up with a better plan. If we planned it, if we continue to really use the carbon reserves and coal and oil and the gas that we've got, if the world really goes to that extreme where we decide to pump it all out and use it in the next 100 or 200 years, 300 years, yeah, we definitely have to relocate cities. There's no question in my mind that that would be stopgap. Now, my idea basically is that, you know, as we progress, you know, economists will basically start to just figure out how much global warming will cost in terms of dislocations and adaptation. And my feeling is that you start to really understand the balance of what we're doing in terms of costs and benefits, and at that point, I think people would have to start to reassess their energy utilization, you know, not only in terms of quantity, but where it's coming from. So I think we all probably should worry about how much oil we're really using and what our footprint is. So I would totally agree with Dr. Hansen's assessment that this is kind of a stopgap measure, but I hope that it's sort of like, unlike the rest of the world, Americans seem to be really with their head in the sand on this in terms of what we should be doing to really make these places survivable that are along the coast.
Yeah, I read that the state of Virginia passed a law expressly forbidding accounting for rising seas in planning documents. Is that true?
Well, I think you're probably more thinking about North Carolina, where the state legislature actually, on the Outer Banks of North Carolina, which is a very narrow band of sand that goes on the outer coast. It's a beautiful place, but it is very precarious in terms of sea level rise and surge. The communities there were actively worried about sea level, and a number of interests and trenchants got a law passed from the state legislatures, which said initially that they were going to have to reassess their assessments with the view that they were no longer to use future projections, but only past evidence of sea level rise to really decide where to put structures like condominiums and whatnot. That's been withdrawn. I think it was passed by one house, but not the other. And now there's a committee that's looking into the whole thing. But what's interesting, the scientists have a few seats on the committee, but there's also a huge interest among the developers and real estate people that tend to feel that we don't need to put any brakes on development anywhere along the bank. So I think it's one of those tragedies that has emerged along the East Coast. It's most of the states are probably trying to do something. I know Florida is, and I know Maryland has really been on the forefront, but Virginia has been a little behind, but they have a big naval base down at Norfolk, and I know that talking to the Department of Defense people that they are very anxious about sea level rise, and they've started to formulate plans on at least some dikes, polders kind of around the periphery of some of their most vulnerable areas already. So I think actually Virginia is slowly coming around to the idea. I think that, you know, they're going to have to do more on that.
Well, I'm sorry to say we've run out of time. Our guest has been Professor J. Cort Stevenson from the University of Maryland Center for Environmental Science in Cambridge, Maryland. Maybe we can talk again. I think there's a lot more here. Thank you so much for helping us out.
Well, you're quite welcome.
I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.